Hello, everyone. I'm Carrie.
And I'm Kristen.
And we're bringing you our weekly podcast called Girlfriend's Guide to Blending Families. Kristen and I met a few years ago through a mom's club in our town, but our friendship really took off when we started sharing the heartaches and successes we both experienced in raising our children in blended families.
We hope to share insights, stories, and a few laughs with you on this crazy and rewarding journey of parenting. So grab your glass of wine, and if something we share resonates with you, let us know. We would love to hear from you.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Hello, Miss Kristen.
Hello. How are you?
I'm great. So we are ready to get started on episode 14 of Girlfriend's Guide to Blending Families. I can't believe we're on 14.
I know. Awesome.
We wanted to talk to you guys today about a one big happy family and how different dynamics with the parents can create different dynamics in the kids, both when they're young and as they grow up. So kind of wanted to start, Kristen, with the idea of having two separate lives versus one big happy life between, you know, mom, dad, stepdad, stepmom, and however else that could go.
Yeah, I think it's good, you know, to kind of look at it as like a big picture topic today. So, you know, how you can basically approach co-parenting or, you know, living in a blended family either as two separate lives or really trying your best as adults, you know, to blend even when you're not together. So, you know, some of the things that we talked about, when you do try to keep, you know, your life separate from your ex and you have a shared child, what that is like for the kids. So, you know, some of the things that can happen for the children is just having anxiety that comes up. So, you know, I know when I first started out, when my ex-husband and I got divorced, you know, I had such a tremendous amount of like fear and worry and, you know, she was little, my daughter. So I couldn't really ask too many questions, but I kind of felt like just this big void of like wondering, like, what is it that you do when I'm not there and who are you around? And, you know, like little things like, are you eating well? Are you taking your naps? Are you, you know, if you're sick or are you getting your temperature taken? So I think one of the things that can happen out of that anxiety is really asking like a lot of questions that can cause anxiety for the children.
Yes. And I think that, you know, just like you said, when they're real little, depending on at what point, you know, the separation happens, they're in different stages. So, right. You're like, you could still be nursing and you're now sending like breast milk or, you know, they can't talk yet. So they can't tell you. But on the flip side of that, when they do get older and they are able to talk to you, it's really hard to not ask a ton of questions. And, you know, I've done it where you ask all these probing questions because you want to know, well, what did you do? Like, who was there? Where did you eat? What did you eat? And I can say for myself, as time has gone on, I don't worry about it anymore. I don't know if I'm more comfortable or my son's just older, so I don't need to know every little detail. Mm-hmm. Do you think that, you know, you have a daughter that's a little bit younger and a little bit older. So what do you think? Is it the kid's age or is it just your level of comfort with the other parent?
I really do think it's about me and my comfort, you know, because my daughters are two different ages now. My little one's pretty little. And I don't have that same anxiety. I guess because there's a certain amount of, you know, just control you have to give up of just understanding that I'm not going to know everything. And even when I do ask questions, like, you know, my little one, it could be like a totally irrelevant fact that it may not have happened. Like even today, my mom was like, what'd you do? Did you go to the playground? And she was like, yeah. And I was like, no, we didn't. We went to McDonald's. So, you know, it's like a complete lie on your part. So I think it is just about the comfort, knowing that there's going to be stuff that happens outside of your life with your kid. And you know, it's going to be okay. As long as they're happy and seemingly healthy, you know, the nitty gritty details really are for us. And we don't actually need to know all of that stuff.
I agree. And so, you know, you and I had chatted about ways that you can create anxiety for kids, either, you know, not knowingly, obviously, I don't think any of us would set out to do that, but without realizing, because of the dynamic with you and your ex, what you're doing to the kids. So, you know, asking all those probing questions where they feel torn between mom and dad, or they feel like their loyalties are being jeopardized. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, arguments in between the parents is a big one. Getting even more, you know, serious restraining orders, legal issues where there's actual, you know, legalities involved that can definitely, depending on the kids' ages, if they're understanding what's happening, that definitely would create more anxiety. And physical distance, I thought this one was a good one, because for me growing up, my parents lived 2 hours away from each other. So that was just a choice my mom made. It was a job opportunity she had. And I don't think, I mean, she's told me that she never really like thought it all the way through. It was just, you know, she had to go. She had an opportunity. She was moving and her sister was in New Jersey. So that's what she did. But it definitely adds anxiety for the kids. And it did for me, because you can't really blend, you know, those two separate houses when you're physically in different states.
Yeah. And I think that that is so hard, because I've just had that experience working with other clients who, you know, are going through divorce and custody issues, and the other person, you know, is in a new relationship and their new partner might be out of the area, you know, could be an hour away, it could be 6 hours away. And, you know, that is the choice that I guess you have to make, is, you know, am I putting my kids first? Am I putting, you know, this relationship first? How is this all going to work out? But that's definitely, you know, it's definitely an issue where, you know, it sounds like maybe you are young, so it wasn't something that was necessarily like even discussed. It was kind of just like, I'm doing this and this is, you know, how it's going to go. But also when you have siblings involved and kids of different ages, I can see how that, you know, is really creating two separate houses where you almost have to have like the kids in one house one whole week or the better part of the week, and then just on weekends, you know, so the time is maybe not 100% like, you know, equally divided.
Right. I mean, you can't really manage it doing like, you know, two on, two off, or 2-3, however, you know, some agreements are. But And I don't mean to say that the physical distance is something that is, you know, set out to create anxiety. Sometimes it has to happen. You know, sometimes people get jobs and they have to move, or like you said, a new relationship. But just thinking about what are the things that could create this anxiety and this need for a child to have two separate lives, mm-hmm. versus how can we do better and how can we create a peaceful environment for our kids in blended families, so that, you know, whether or not they live, you know, 2 blocks away, 2 miles away, 2 hours away, that they feel like, you know, they can call mom when they're at dad's house, or they can call dad when they're at mom's house, and they can share what goes on at both places and feel comfortable doing that. So what do you think are some ideas on like how we can co-parent well to create that stable environment for them, so that they don't, our kids don't feel this anxiety and divide in their lives?
Yeah. So it's funny. I had this session this week of this guy, which I thought was odd, because he, you know, was divorced from his wife and his kids grew up going back and forth between two houses. And I was saying how my daughter was away skiing this week with her dad. And he was like, oh, she gets along with him or something like that. And I was like, yeah, it's her dad. Like, of course she does. And I said, yeah, we actually, you know, we have 50-50 custody. We just split her during the week, you know, like Wednesday to Sunday and Sunday to Wednesday. And he was like, oh, that must be really confusing for her. And I was like, No, I mean, she basically has one life that she, you know, has two different houses that she lives in. So, you know, I think, you know, this is my hope is that my goal for her is that she doesn't think that she has one life, one place, and one life, another place, that she just thinks, you know, she's just one person. And sometimes she sleeps here and sometimes she sleeps there. So, you know, that's what my hope is for her. And I think, you know, we're doing a pretty good job with that. So I think the first, you know, there's just some major components to having that good, you know, one life for your kids. So the first thing I would say is sharing the decisions, you know, not like I'm going to decide this on my time and you're going to decide this on your time, you know, about like school and homework and issues, like you and I are always talking about little issues with the friends at school, things with the teachers, that's something that both parents know so that both parents are checking in about it at home. And even like discipline. So I know my daughter's dad and I, we text a lot about like her mood and, you know, how to handle it. Like, you know, if she's just in a bad mood, you're not necessarily like going to punish her. You're not going to give her a timeout. You know, how do you like kind of like cajole her out of this mood? And we kind of bounce ideas back and forth because I don't know what I'm doing and he doesn't know what he's doing. You know, she's like a unique human. So for me, just all of those shared decisions makes for like one good, peaceful household.
I agree. And we, you know, we have the same type of thing with our son that I will call his dad and say, hey, this is what happened today. Like, this is what I want to do. Or this is the new rule for this week because I'm sick of Fortnite and we really need to like cut it back. And I can't control what happens at his house, but he's always very supportive. And like, you know, we'll bounce ideas back and forth and he'll say, well, can he earn the time? And you know, I'm like, yeah, I guess that's fine, but I just really want them to cut back. And he'll say, okay. And I do like follow up and ask Lucas questions about that kind of stuff. So how much time did dad give you? Because I want to know, like, is he just yesing me to death or is he actually, you know,
right,
following up on my decisions? And so far, like, he's been really good. And we've even gotten to times where I'm like ready to lose my patience and my son's freaking out about something and I call his dad. And I'm like, yeah. Because I know he doesn't act like that. And sometimes I feel like, oh, I shouldn't have to do that. Like, I should be in control enough. And other times I'm like, you know what? No. Like, if we lived in the same house, he'd be involved. I certainly would go to the other room and get him. So, you know, here we are.
Yeah. And I think, too, it's funny because, like, probably if you were still together, this is just my opinion on it, you might argue about, like, the discipline a little bit more. But because there's, like, distance between you and you're more objective, you can say, like, oh yeah, that is a good idea. Yeah, we should limit, you know, his Fortnite time. Yeah, okay, like, or yeah, let's get some incentivizing back so that he can earn the time. You know, like sometimes you would argue about like the discipline, but because you're not together all the time, you can just be like, oh yeah, that's a good idea. I'll just take it as that.
I agree. And because you're not like heated over it, when I call him, it's usually like after the fact. Sometimes it's in the moment, but that's usually when I just like put him on the phone with my son.
Yeah. Yeah. It's more like you're just going to the other parent for support. Yeah. Yeah. So it does seem to work that way.
So I think the sharing decisions is good, you know, even on stuff like birthday parties. I mean, I am the planner, but his dad will just say, tell me what you need. Like, if you want me to pick up the cake, I will. And stuff like that makes it simple and cohesive. I think cohesive is a good word. That just popped into my head because I don't think my son feels any divide other than like, you know, having two houses. But otherwise, it's totally, you know, dad might pick me up and mom is going to drop me off and it's just comfortable. And I think a lot of that definitely has to do with how much time is going on. And as the kids get older, they get more used to the situation.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, all like the animosities kind of put aside, put to rest, and you can actually just focus on the tasks of parenting, which is very nice actually to have like, you know, just a partner in that where there's not anything else negative going on.
Right. And you know, as time goes by, your emotions decrease and you don't have that, you know, you still, we still disagree in my situation, and we don't always agree on everything, but I don't have that personal issue anymore. There's no personal hatred or hurt or anything like that that's going on anymore. So it takes everything, like tones everything way down.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So, and I know for us, like, so this week my daughter's on vacation, and I can just tell, you know, by each time that goes by, it's just a little easier for me, and maybe because she is older. But it's also like, I think something else that helps create that, that feeling of just one house, is being like flexible with schedules. And I think your whatever word that you said, which I already forgot,
cohesive.
And it was started with C. I was thinking like just being like cooperative with each other. So, I know that when she, so I had her for a week, and then I sort of let her go a night early, cause it would, it was what was best for her. So they were leaving early in the morning to go on their trip. And instead of me keeping her and getting up early and getting her up there, and, you know, I just said, why don't you pick her up the night before so that they could, you know, all sleep together and get up and be super duper excited. And, you know, I'd already spent like 10 days with her. So one, you know, more 8-hour stint wasn't going to make or break anything, which, you know, was very well received and then reciprocated to me. So tomorrow, you know, they're coming back. I thought I wasn't going to see her till maybe like Sunday, Sunday night. And then, you know, her dad just said, oh, we're coming back tomorrow. Do you want to have her tomorrow night and on Sunday? Which was awesome, because for not seeing her all week, that's just like the hugest gift ever, you know, to be
able absolutely
to time. So, for me, that's how it also flows, is like just being flexible with the time, and it comes across as just being really considerate to the other parent.
It does. And little stuff like that goes, you said, like you said, it's just, it's kind of monumental, because
yeah,
knowing that they're being, you know, thoughtful enough to do that and considerate, there's another C word, being considerate of how you feel and knowing that you miss them, because they know, he knows that he misses her when she's with you for that long. So
it's, yeah.
And I definitely,
you know, that they would just be unpacking their clothes, you know, so it's kind of like, right, he realizes, okay, like, this isn't about him, this is about like her and the other person. So yeah, I definitely appreciated that.
Awesome. So some of the going with the consideration, cohesiveness, and what was the other thing you said? It was three C's.
Lost it already.
So I had something recently that was very considerate and also gave me that same like big monumental, like, wow, my ex is buying a house with his girlfriend and her son.
Mm-hmm.
And the other day it was, you know, his weekend with Lucas, and he said, do you want to just bring him down so you can see the house and see, you know, where he's going to be?
Yeah.
And I just felt like, wow, like, that's awesome. Yeah, of course I want to know where he's going to be. But I didn't have to ask. I didn't say that or, you know, mention it. He just knew that that would be important to me. So he offered.
Yeah.
So I went down and dropped Lucas off. I brought my other two kids with me. And Lucas was able to, like, give us all a tour of the house and show us his new room. And then I got to talk to, you know, my ex and my first mother-in-law. And it was great. And then my godson, who is Lucas's cousin, was there. So then we all went outside and played football for a little bit. And then, you know, I gave Lucas a hug and kiss goodbye, and I left. Mm-hmm. Or we left. And it was just, like, cool. And I just left there feeling like, wow, that was really great. He didn't have to do that. He didn't have to let me even, like, on his property, let alone, like, in his house and in his bedroom, you know. And they're not moved in yet. It's all still, you know, being remodeled. But it was just, it was really cool. And I felt like the mutual consideration and extending that gesture went a long, long way with me.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, alternatively, you would have just probably been, you know, on some level, just like you know, firing questions at your son, like, so what's your room look like? And what's the neighborhood look like? And, you know, it's not like he's a baby where you need to like check for safety things, but you're still like, that's where his new house is going to be. So you're just naturally like curious and want to know everything's good to go. So I think that that was really great to just say like, here it is, check it out. This is going to be his new place. And, you know, so that you feel good, so you feel comfortable, because that's also a big step that, you know, that his dad's moving in with his girlfriend. There's going to be another kid there. So that's, you know, those are a couple new things for you guys.
Right. And I think, you know, thinking of it from my own personal level, it made me more comfortable. But I also think for my son, like, it made him feel better about it, because I think he probably has a little bit of anxiety about, you know, moving from just him and his dad to now him and his dad and girlfriend and, you know, other child. And he loves the little baby, and he, I think he's good with his dad's girlfriend, but he's 8 and he's, you know, still like, girls are gross and right. Ew, we don't have girlfriends. Like, no, it's just my dad's friend, you know? But I think that it was good for him to like, know that I know. He's a very sensitive and perceptive kid. So, and I think in general, kids are pretty perceptive, that they can tell if mom and dad aren't agreeing, or
yes,
there's that animosity. So just for him to see us all in the same place, like everything's cool, I think that gives him that sense of peace and calm.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there's not any way you can hide that from your kids, no matter how old they are, even if you're not necessarily like, you know, arguing verbally with the other person, like on the phone, you know, like I just know, like in the beginning when there's like text messages going back and forth and you're frustrated and, you know, you just carry that with you. There's no way that your kids don't pick up on that. So, you know, like for your son, if he didn't have you guys over, you know, there might have been a feeling of like, oh, should I tell mom about this or not? You know, should I get really excited about my new, you know, comforter in my bed? Or is that something that's going to upset mom? Maybe I shouldn't tell her about it. You know, that's just a lot that he would have carried himself.
Yes, exactly. And so part of like where all of this topic idea came from was because I can see in him how he has a pretty peaceful one life, you know, kind of thing going on. Mm-hmm. But then my stepdaughters don't have that. And I can see it from the 11-year-old all the way up to the 20-year-old, the divide and how they still feel this need to have two separate lives and they can't tell something. And you're like walking on eggshells, because I can see even, you know, the 20-year-old's an adult and she will couch what she says and be careful how she says it because she doesn't want to upset anybody.
Right.
And I feel like that just creates, I know that that creates so much anxiety for them. And it's, I don't know when that goes away. And I don't know if it's like the parents' job to help it go away, or if it's, you know, as kids get older, they work out their own issues and figure it out. But I think that what we can do and what I'm hoping to convey to our listeners is that trying to create this one life and to make the parent level be calm so that it is calm for your kids is just so important.
Yeah, I agree with you, because I feel like it is led by the parent. And, you know, even for your 20-year-old stepdaughter, like you would hope, like at some point she's going to grow out of it. But that's kind of like the framework that was instilled in her. That's, you know, what has been downloaded to her. So she only knows like, oh, dad's not going to want to know, like hear this about mom, or mom's not going to want to know this about dad, or I can't, you know, tell mom about something cool that happened at dad's house and vice versa, you know, like that probably will go on, you know, for the rest of their lives until like those two adults can get together and be civil, because they're the ones that are, you know, modeling that for everybody. So yeah, that's definitely unfortunate, because I think about your stepdaughters and think like, how do they even know to be like that? You know, like, did they discuss with each other, you know, how they should communicate? Probably not. It's just probably something they've all had to figure out individually, which is so tough to go through a divorce anyway, on top of like having to negotiate that between your parents. It's just, that's rough. That's definitely rough.
It is. So, you know, I think that we talked about a couple of ways to create the peaceful dynamic. And the last one that you and I had talked about was to also maintain your relationship with the other family members, like the grandparents, cousins, et cetera. Because I really think that, you know, helps maintain the cohesiveness, even if you can't get along with your ex per se. If you are still cordial with your mother-in-law and she can come see the kids or kid, however many it may be, but that helps, you know, bridge that gap a little bit between the two families.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I think that's a great solution for that because, you know, sometimes just, you know, money's involved and there is bitterness with divorce. There's just no way around it. And sometimes you can get over it quickly and sometimes you can't, just depending on the situation. But right, I agree. That's a way to show your kids that, you know, we still are one family, even though like mom and dad are having a little bit of a difficult time. So I agree with you. I mean, I think it really shows that, you know, all of us still love you kids. So like, I know the other day I had to ask, you know, my first mother-in-law to watch my daughter because everybody was like out of town randomly. And so it was really cool. I mean, that's what she's there for. It was a Saturday night, you know, she's just hanging at home. I would prefer not to use a babysitter. You know, I would have just stayed home myself if I couldn't use her. So, you know, it was great. We chit chat for a few minutes. We hugged out and we're good to go, you know, and that like meant the world to my daughter too, that even though it was my day, she got to see her other grandmom who she loves. So it was a win-win.
Exactly. And we'll do, you know, I'll have my godson, who is my ex's nephew. I'm going to make sure I have that right. Yes, my ex's nephew. But, you know, he was born when we were married and we were the godparents. And he'll come over here and have sleepovers. Not all the time because they're getting older now. But it's like, you know, it's a blending of the family kind of thing. Blending of the bigger family, not just your immediate family.
Yeah.
And, you know, we do Christmas with my first mother-in-law and my kids, and she buys gifts for all my kids that are not related to her. But, you know, we are fortunate that in our family, like, it doesn't matter, you know, we're everybody's brother and sister, everybody's grandparent and kid and parent. And it's just, it works out, I think, really well. And I try to keep that peace in them so that, you know, when things do come up, because stuff happens, you know, we don't always get along, that they still are grounded in that knowing it's going to be fine. Everybody doesn't hate each other and I'm fine. They all love me.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely.
So how do you think, you know, we talked about what the parents can do to either create anxiety for your kids and this divide, or on the better side, create a peaceful, universal, you know, one life for the kids. Mm-hmm. But how do you think, and I think maybe you can pull in your expertise in this one, like, how do you think that affects the kids going through their lives and who do they become based on that?
Yeah. You mean when they keep things separate?
Yeah. Like how does that affect them? Like if they feel like they can share in their one life versus the child that doesn't have that experience, that has the very divided life that, you know, they can't talk about what happened to dads with mom and vice versa. And how does that manifest as they go through their lives?
Yeah. It's funny. Cause I was just like doing some, I don't know, like just kind of soul searching about myself recently. And like I came upon this guided meditation that was really good. And it was about something about like your intrinsic self. So like, you know, how we think of ourselves like in all these little boxes and, you know, who you are at work and who you are at home and who you are to your friends. And, you know, it was kind of like at the end of the day, you just want to be the person when you walk in your house and you shut the door and you're like so happy to be at home, you know, and it's finally peace. Like that's the person that you always want to be. And so like we do it as adults, but as kids, I think it's even harder when you're, you know, really compartmentalizing, you know, who you are, like splitting up pieces of yourself. So you're, you know, like this at mom's house, you're like this at dad's house, you're like this, you know, at school, you're like this, you know, if you're a older sibling in one house, you have younger you know, you're the youngest kid in another house, that can be confusing, I would say, when it's already confusing enough in life. So, you know, I think that's why certain things are really important, like sports and activities and having that kind of like constant. So if your kid's great at gymnastics, you know that mom and dad both need to be involved with the gymnastics and, you know, show up to the events, because that's really intrinsic to who the kid is. They're just, you know, they love gymnastics and that's a piece of them, as opposed to like dividing it up. You know, at our house they do horseback riding, at your house they do soccer, and like, you know, never will the two overlap. So that's just kind of my thought about it.
Yeah. And I actually have that exact experience going on now. And it's, I try to make sure we're involved with the activities that don't necessarily happen on our time,
mm-hmm.
but I have to find out about them, schedule them, like go above and beyond to find out when they are, where they are, what time, because that information is not shared. And I've done that ever since they were little, like ever since I came into the picture, because I just had that feeling that that was important. I don't know why I thought that, but I just always thought that, you know, yeah, we should be at the recitals, we should be at the competitions, we should be at the graduations, like all that stuff. Even if we have to bend over backwards to find the information, we have to do it. And it's important, like looking back, that they remember we were all there.
Absolutely. I give you so much credit for even having like that insight and just that instinct to do that, because I know for me, like with my daughter, so she, you know, the girls are doing cheerleading and it was kind of like, well, she's doing it on Saturdays, which are my days. So I think that I didn't initially like even think her dad was going to come. So I just kind of like half-assedly, you know, threw it out there on a text, like, oh, her first game is whatever, if you want to come. And he was like, oh, absolutely. You know, and he's been to like everyone since.
Everyone. Yeah, so, I know.
And then like his mom, when I dropped her off, was like, oh yeah, so we're going to come to a game. And I was like kind of surprised, but at the same time, I shouldn't be, because for exactly what you're saying, you know, it is important. And I will, you know, file that away for future things, just because like, if you're doing gymnastics on my day, doesn't mean that your dad shouldn't come to the gymnastics show, or, you know, be there on Saturdays if he's in the area, just swing by and see what you're doing.
Yeah,
that is very helpful.
And even like we're saying with the extended family, like I extend those invitations to all the grandparents too, because, you know, I would want that for me, if, you know, I wasn't the one being involved or planning it, I would want somebody to let me know.
Mm-hmm. Yep, definitely.
So some of the thoughts I had with creating kids that who feel like they have the one life and they're able to and comfortable sharing both sides of their lives is, you know, some practical tips on what to do. So when, mm-hmm. you know, I have the kids and it's my time every night, I'll be like, don't forget to call dad, don't forget to call mom.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten away from that habit on the one side, just because they're older now and I don't need to remind them. They all have their own cell phones, whatever. But when they were young, you know, we're on vacation, like, have you talked to your mom this week? And, you know, reminding to call. And, you know, Lucas FaceTimes his dad regularly. I don't really need to remind him anymore. He's old enough to do it. But so calling and keeping in touch with both sides, and then making sure they're comfortable saying like, I miss dad, or I miss mom. Like, how do you guys handle that with, your girls say, I miss my dad, what do you guys do?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Even my younger one's been saying that recently, which is new for her. And I, again, don't have that feeling of like, ooh, zing, you know, something's wrong with me. Cause I'm sure, honestly, like it probably, I don't know, but it probably is true in like regular people houses, you know, like I've seen like where friends have posted like, oh, finally, you know, like little Joey's, you know, back to being a mommy's girl after he was like a daddy's girl, or, you know, whatever, daddy's boy for so long, you know, in the same household that the kids can go back and forth between, like,
sure.
you know, what parent they're more inclined to be with. So yeah, I feel like I can definitely say like, oh, you miss dad, like, do you want to call him, or he misses you too, or you're gonna see him later today. I fully support that and think that's important, just to, because you're kind of just clearing the air, you know. You're definitely letting the kids know that it's okay to be sad and it's okay to miss, and what can we do about it?
Right. And I think just validating their feelings, and I do the same, like, yeah, I'm sure dad misses you too, do you want to call? And just giving them the okay to express that.
Right. Right.
So that's one, that's helping tips to help create the kids that share. And then some maybe like things not to do if we don't want to end up in that situation. So if you don't mm-hmm. want your kids to have completely separate lives, like, you know, trying not to create that anxiety or stress, and
right, you
know, don't probe them with 1,000 questions about, well, what did dad's girlfriend say, or right. you know, whatever.
Or like in your worst moments of, oh, that makes me sad when you say, you know, that you miss dad, don't you miss, you know, don't you love mommy, you know, like, you, it even sounds terrible saying it out loud, like, I kind of cringe even like having the words come out of my mouth, but you know when you're not on your A game as a good co-parent. So, you know, if it feels like it's gonna send your kids into therapy in the short term or long term, just really, you know, I would say just try to understand what things are about you and what things are about your kid.
Yes. And we've, I mean, all been there. I mean, there's times when I, as good as I think we have it, my son will sometimes be like, I just really miss my dad. And in my mind, I'm going, do you miss me when you're there? And I know for sure the answer is probably no. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's just my own insecurity, but like, he doesn't call me. Actually, that's not even true. Lately, he has been calling me and saying, I miss you, mommy. But I think that's his dad's probing. Like, I don't really think he's doing it.
Right.
And our parenting plan, or our custody, is I have him for more days in a row. He has him on a consistent schedule, but my son will count me down on it. Well, you've had me for 5 days and dad only has me for 2. Mm. And I'm like, oh, you know. So even in the best of situations, which I consider us pretty fortunate that we have a good dynamic going on, yeah, I still have those feelings, and you just kind of have to like bite your tongue and say, okay, that's probably not a great thing to say right now.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I just go back to just trying to really focus on, is this about me or is this about them? You know, and if it's about me, I need to suck it up. I'm a grown ass person, and, you know, I'll get over it, or, you know, something else will happen and I can fill that, you know, emotion with something else, as opposed to like making this into something much bigger, you know, than it needs to be.
Yes. And I think you're really good at that. You're very good at analyzing if it's, you know, a you issue or a kid issue and what you need to do about it.
Yeah, I try, but, you know, we're not perfect.
Nope, none of us are, but hopefully we can keep muddling on through and create, I think, what we all want is the best for our kids, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I do appreciate this episode, because I think, you know, it's just good to talk about the things that create what we want for our kids, and as co-parents and blending families, and the things, you know, kind of like the pitfalls to stay away from. So I think that everybody probably came away with a few helpful things, and just, you know, the goals in general.
I hope so. I think that is a good wrap up for the evening.
Okay. So we hope we shared something with everyone tonight. If something resonated with what you're going through, let us know and share our podcast with your friends. Our goal is to help us all step up in our parenting skills and to blend gracefully. See you next week on the Girlfriend's Guide to Blending Families.
Cheers.